Cuban ambassador to India, Bangladesh, Bhutan, and Nepal. Welcome to India, Russia, and the world.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for inviting me today, or Russia Today, which is a very well-recognized media in the world.
Glad you feel like that. My first question to you, Ambassador, would be, what is Cuba's position on the ceasefire between US and Iran? And how do you see it? Is it real progress towards peace, or do you think it's a very patchy, bumpy pause?
Well, in a very comprehensive view, what is happening today, I can say that the foreign policy of the US is looking for its dominance in the world. You know, I am talking politically, but also economically. They would like to own the more strategic natural resources everywhere, where they did in the, for example, in Venezuela and now in Iran. By the chance, Venezuela is the first reserve of oil all over the world, and Iran is the third. So if you look that, they are trying to impose its dominance. So I think the pretext is to avoid that Iran has nuclear weapons. They were negotiating before, and the AEA, the international agency in charge of this issue, was also present in Iran. So I can only state that this war is looking for first to have more presence in the region, to access to the natural strategic resources that is in the interest of US. Was an illegal and unilateral military aggression towards Iran because was not consulted even in the US Congress, not the international community, not the Security Council. If you see before the war, the Strait of Hormuz was open. So the situation was normal in the region. Nobody were scared to using the Strait of Hormuz in order to, the transit of the ships and vessels transporting oil, on gas, on all the different products. The problem started with the war. And of course, Iran is trying to use all the possibilities in order to force US to accept the condition not to have a new aggression in the future, because you cannot make a deal now, and in 6 months, you started bombing once again and started the war against Iran. So they are looking for more stability in the international relationship, not only with US, also with different countries.
What about the ceasefire? Because within hours of that, Israel struck over 100 targets in Beirut. There were civilian deaths as well. What was your reaction when you saw some of those images coming in?
Well, remember, they tested the same situation, unfortunately, in Palestine. And more than 80,000 people were killed, and mainly children, women, that in this occasion, the international organization that were working in Palestine were also damaged or killed or target of this bombing. So it's a reality. And it's the same they're looking for in Lebanon. So it's not only Hezbollah, as they said, is to expand the presence and the dominance of Israel in the region. So we cannot accept it.
Donald Trump says that it would be Cuba next after Venezuela and Iran. How do you react?
The history between Cuba and the United States doesn't start now. In the late 19th century, when the liberation movement in Cuba was almost to reach the independence, defeating the Spaniard army, the U.S. made a military invasion in Cuba. It was in 1887, and they stayed in Cuba for 5 years. We were at that time a colony of U.S. He delivered the handover the government to a president that was submitted to U.S. And for almost 60 years, we were a neo-colony of U.S. as well. And they owned at that time the main strategic sectors of the Cuban economy. If we are talking about agriculture, mining, sugarcane production, energy, also telecommunication, everything was in the hands of the U.S. transnational. Cuba was not a free country. Even during this period, they made 6 military aggressions. Anytime they felt that his interest was in some kind in dangerous in our country, they made a military invasion. This was stopped with the Cuban Revolution, January 1st, 1959. We became an independent country with our own voice in the international arena. And maybe this attempt to reverse the Cuban Revolution is because Cuba has become an example that you can be a small country, stand up the big power as U.S. chose 90 miles from our territory. Also, U.S. trying to impose in Latin America the so-called Monroe Doctrine, which means that all Latin American governments should be submitted to the interests of the U.S. and they have the right of the dominance of all the strategic resources in Latin America, and no other power in the world could be present. And Cuba is also an obstacle for U.S. in order to impose its dominance in our region. They also said that they cannot accept in the Western Hemisphere the any socialist country. So the problem is that U.S. should accept that the Cuban people has the right to determine its own political and economical system in our country. This decision belongs to the Cuban people, not to U.S. So we are not going to accept any attempt from U.S. trying to change our political system.
Is Donald Trump then simply repeating the same old Cold War script that U.S. presidents have followed for decades?
This administration has raised some concepts that we should follow up very, very clear and very closely. For example, they said that they are going for peace through force. It is clear. If you are looking peace through force, you are talking as an empire, you know, that you can impose to the country what you want. That the peace in their concept is country submitted to the U.S. interest. And they are going for this to reach this goal through the war, through military aggressions, and it's unacceptable for the international community. They are disregarding the United Nations, you know. They are, for example, U.S. has withdrawn from more than 60 international organizations. Half of them belongs to the United Nations. So it is also a very risk, because the only body that is responsible, that should be responsible to preserve the peace, is the United Nations. The Global South first and the rest should be united in this position. We cannot accept this imposition of dominance or hegemony of the current U.S. administration.
How important are partners like Russia and China for Cuba today?
After 3 months, no received a single drop of oil in Cuba. Was a Russian ship arriving to Cuba. The population was, you know, very happy to see that our historical partner, Russia, with whom we have developed a strategic partnership during more than 65 years, once again was a friendly hand providing to Cuba the oil that we require for a normal functioning in our country. Of course, it was 100,000 tons of oil, but was more than that. It was a message that the decision to support Cuba in a very critical moment, and we have feeling a lot of gratitude to the Russian people. Russia, first and before the Soviet Union, has always an important presence in the Cuban society and in the Cuban economy. Thousands of Cuba went to Russia to study, you know, including myself. I studied in Russia for 3 years. I got a Ruparuski. So, and many, many of my generation as well. Even today, there are hundreds of Cuban studying in Moscow, in different Russian universities. Russia has an important presence in the energy sector in Cuba, but also in transportation. We are cooperating in biotechnology. Recently, we launched a new partnership in order to make co-development and co-production of new vaccines combating cancer, as I referred. So there are an important presence of Russia in Cuba, and we are very proud of the history. In the case of China, China is cooperating with Cuba. For example, we are in the process of energy transition now in our country. And last year, we were able to install in Cuba more than 1,000 megawatts through solar panels, solar resources in our country. And China is our partner in this.
In backing Cuba, is Russia then sending a broader message to the U.S.?
Yes, of course. Because even, at that time, U.S. was threatening any country supplying oil to Cuba to impose a tariff or even to kidnap the ships on the vessels. And Russia was very, I can say, courage in order to send this support to Cuba, even though this situation. The day after this ship arrived to Cuba, President Trump said, well, I am not opposed to any country that would like to supply oil to Cuba. It's not really true, because the possibility of sanctions are on the table, you know, and Cuba cannot buy oil by free. We would like, because we have the right to have free commerce with any country in the world, and we are on this position to buy oil, but it's not possible. So still the blockade of the oil supply to Cuba is in force. But Russia made an example that it is possible to, you know, not to follow up the rules imposed by the U.S., and the sovereign decision could be taken in order to support a partner country.
There are reports now about a renewed Russian investment in Cuba, in infrastructure, tourism, energy sectors. What does this new phase look like?
That Russia will open a factory in Cuba in order to produce automobiles and cars and transportation as a whole. Also to make some investments in the agricultural sector in Cuba, because we are offering to foreign partners to produce to food production, co-food production in Cuba. And Russia is looking also for this opportunity. Also in general, in transportation, Russia is going to supply to some facilities to Cuba in transportation, also in energy, because we are looking also to increase the oil production in Cuba. Cuba is looking to be self-sufficient in energy production, and Russia is also a partner of Cuba in this sector, and many others. I see Cuba is offering new opportunities for the Russian company to be present in Cuba. We have a very strong legal framework in order to protect the foreign companies participating in the Cuban economy. Cuba is a stable country, and we are committed to fulfill all the financial agreements. We are giving more facility for companies, for example, to operate their banking account from abroad to facilitate and to protect them. So there are new approaches, specifically with Russia, in order to improve their participation in the Cuban economy.
And how would you describe the India-Cuba relationship from, say, the Nehru era to the Modi era? Is there more scope of, say, trade, for example?
Yes, has been a long-standing and beautiful history between our two countries. As you can see in the picture in the back, this picture was taken in 1960 in New York. They both were attending the General Assembly of the United Nations, and Fidel made an historical speech, almost 5 hours, talking, addressing the General Assembly, explaining in detail the Cuban situation at that time, our position regarding the international conflicts in the 60s. It is not only in the history, has been in all these 66 years. We are celebrating 66 years of bilateral diplomatic relations between the two countries. And I remember, for example, last year, during the summit, BRICS summit in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, the Cuban president, Miguel Díaz-Canel, had a meeting with the prime minister, Modi Ji, and they were also agreed in order to continue strengthening our economic and cooperation relations between the two countries.
I also want to talk to you about how Cuba has consistently supported India's bid for a permanent UNSC seat. Why is that UN reform important for Cuba?
Well, Cuba is supporting that the Global South must to have a more relevant position and voice in the Security Council. And we are supporting, for example, India, but we are supporting Brazil, we are supporting South Africa. So also we should have more regional representation in the permanent members of the United Nations, of the Security Council, in order to be more inclusive.
When India continues to buy Russian oil despite Western pressure, do you think that it signals a shift? Does that give hope to countries, say, in the Global South that are trying to push back against Western sanctions?
We cannot accept this imposition. Nobody should be able to accept the unilateral decisions of any country. If India decided by its own to continue buying Russian oil, if Russia decided that they can supply all to Cuba, it's up to them because they are independent countries and they have the right to take their own decisions. So I think when more countries could be convinced that the only way that to build an international relations based on mutual respect, on cooperation, and the respect of the principles contained in the United Nations chapter is not accepting any kind of position, not from U.S., not from any other power in the world.
The U.S. blockade has impacted Cuba for years, and the Western media has largely remained silent. What has the impact of the blockade and that silence meant for Cuba?
Today, I can say it's not the same blockade that we suffered in the past. During the first Trump administration, they imposed more than 243 measures additionally in order to strangle the Cuban economy. But in this second term, they are going beyond that. For example, last January 29th, Trump signed an executive order declaring Cuba has an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security of the U.S. Nobody can believe that the small island, just 10 million inhabitants, represent a threat to U.S. It is political motivated in order to reinforce the embargo or the blockade. And in this executive order, they impose a blockade to all supply to Cuba. Never we have faced this challenge. You know, it is an economic war declared in this executive order. In 3 months, we didn't receive a single drop of oil in Cuba. We are only producing 20% of the oil that we require for the normal functioning of the Cuban economy. But the rest should be imported from abroad. We imported before from Venezuela. Well, after this military aggression to Venezuela January 3rd, the U.S. suspended any export of oil to Cuba from Venezuela. But now with this blockade, it's difficult to sustain the healthcare system in our country because you don't have electricity in the hospital. It's difficult. We have more than 100,000 patients waiting for medical surgeries, and 11,000 of them are children. If you go for food production, we have 50% of the productive land in Cuba without irrigation. So the productivity, the efficiency is very low, and it has a huge impact in food production and the possibility to supply food to our population as well to cover their necessity. So it has a transversal impact in all the economy, this situation.
The U.S. officials, they have dismissed all the concerns of war crimes in Iran. And this is a country that often preaches the world about the rules-based order, international law, and so on and so forth. What is this? Is this hypocrisy? Is this double standards?
We were talking about this issue from the very beginning. You know, this new approach of the U.S. to impose their own interests in the world and not following the international law and disregarding the United Nations and not taking care of the sovereignty of other countries, to also to break the not to follow up the principles that are contained in the United Nations chapter. We are talking about independence, self-determination, territorial integrity. They made this military aggression, illegal military aggression to Venezuela January 3rd. They kidnapped a legitimate president, Nicolas Maduro, and his wife, Celia Flores, you know, at this, in this occasion, if you remember, 32 Cubans were killed, and they were refusing this aggression, and they were fulfilling their duties, protecting the life of the President Maduro. Is it an example that Cuban people is determined to defend its sovereignty and its independence? If they're threatening to make any military aggression to Cuba, they will find a people that is determined to resist, even though our way is not to look for confrontation, but to look for a dialogue and to find solutions to our standing problem of course, preserving the independence and sovereignty of Cuba.
Cuba has always said that it will defend every inch of its soil. What gives the country this kind of confidence, resilience, defiance, despite the, some would say, imbalance in power with the U.S.?
We are very proud of our history, of all the more than 200 years fighting for our independence that we were able to reach January 1st, 1959. And I remember Playa Girón, Bay of Pigs. So just 2 years after the Cuban Revolution, we suffered this military aggression from U.S., supported by U.S. Government, and we defeated them. Also, Cuba, or during all these years, has been very difficult moment because it's not the first time, unfortunately, that we were submitted to this possibility of a military aggression. I remember Nixon administration, also, for example, Reagan administration, Bush, first and second, father and son, also the first Trump administration. So it's a long history of threatening Cuba, and Cuba has been prepared. And there is a strong commitment in the Cuban population that we will do everything in order to defend our sovereignty, even at the highest cost of our life. No doubt that we'll be determined to defend our sacred homeland, but we are in the priority of Cuba is to find a solution, a peaceful solution through dialogue and negotiations and diplomacy.
Why do you think, Ambassador, that Washington keeps repeating the same regime change script?
Regime change has been always in the portfolio of a U.S. policy towards Cuba, you know. I think that the U.S. should accept that it belongs to the Cuban population to decide. We have been very clear that we cannot accept the interference in the internal issue for Cuba, in the internal political situation in Cuba, who is leading our country, the composition of our governments. All of this belongs to the Cuban people to decide.
If you had a message for Washington, what would it be?
Cuba has never been a threat to U.S. Any U.S. citizen that has visited Cuba never has found in our people any feeling of, you know, rejection or to the U.S. citizens. Not a single case. We have in our identity also some influence from U.S. in the music, in culture, in many things, because we are living very close to each other. There is an important Cuban community also living in U.S., more than 1.5 million Cubans living there. There is many opportunity also to develop a relationship that could be in benefits from both sides. People of both countries deserve this new approach and not to be enemy. We are not enemy.
My final question, Ambassador, do you see the world order changing?
The new order that we expect and we need is a new order based on the principles. So in the new order that instead of unilateralism could be based in multilateralism, instead of peace through force could be based on cooperation, on solidarity, on friendship, We are looking for this world, and Cuba will be always in this team, you know, defending the right to have this new international order.
Many thanks for your time, Ambassador. It's truly been a pleasure.
No, it was a pleasure, and thank you for this opportunity.